Friday, I ask the big question to all. Are you ready? Are you ready for a little off the record, on the record? All righty. I know two people that are, myself, and of course, the great Joe Campolo with the wonderful firm Campolo, Middleton, and McCormick, three locales. Rod Cogg with Bridgehampton, of course. Don't forget Nassau County, doing very well. And Post Avenue there, on Post Avenue in Westbury. The managing partner, ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure. Sir, how are you?
Jay, I'm doing terrific today, man. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. You're getting ready for the holiday season. You all set?
Yeah, I can't believe it. I can't believe that we're halfway into December already. Honestly, I just, we have our holiday party tonight, and I got to tell you, I was like, are you kidding me? We're already here. And I think, Thanksgiving being later this year kind of messed me up a little bit, but I'll get there. I'll shake the cobwebs out, and I will get into the spirit, that's for sure.
You and me both, bud. You and me both. A lot to get to. Let's get right to it. Impeachment, two articles, the vote. Here we go. Get ready for the ride. Strap on the seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen. Joe, it has been an interesting 6 weeks or so when all this started, way back with the House Intelligence, switching over to the Judicial Committee, explanations, experts, professors. We've kind of heard it all and everything else here at this point in time, you know?
Yeah. Look, this is for me as a constitutional historian, this is a fascinating thing, a fascinating process that's going on. For the American public, I don't think anybody really cares about this. I think everybody understands that this is a political process right now, and that the outcome is predetermined, and that's all well and good. But let me tell you what I do think it's important to focus on in this process from a constitutional perspective, and that is, this is really all about, and I love this stuff, I really do. I don't look at things in terms of Democrats and Republicans, because I think that's just kind of silly that we label some people Democrats and label some people Republicans and they fight it out. What I look at is really what's going on between the three branches of government, which is really important, the important part of how our country is supposed to work. And you have a president, and so President Obama, he was very cagey at sort of trying to grow executive power to see how much power a president could do. He had a lot of executive orders, and it drove the Republicans crazy. But, President Obama was very diplomatic, and he was very smooth about the way he did things. So he quietly, with a velvet glove, he quietly was able to creep out how much power the president would have without checks and balances by Congress. President Trump's much, much different. He's a cantankerous guy. And you know what? Congress is pushing back. Congress is pushing back. And if you look at the two, the two articles for abuse of power and for obstruction of Congress, not obstruction of justice, obstruction of Congress, it's all about, it's all about everybody jockeying to see who's going to have more more say going forward. And Congress is doing, what they're entitled to do under the Constitution. The president's pushing as hard as the president pushes. That's what he does. Maybe that's why folks elected him, is they wanted him to push Congress harder. And here we are, the American people sort of watching this, not really understanding exactly what's going on. But it's going to be an impeachment. I think it's probably an important impeachment to put a marker down for presidents going forward, because there has to be a boundary. Jay, at the end of the day, let's not forget, and let's take all the players out of it right now. Let's take all the players out of it. The president of the United States, they'll say, he and hopefully one day she is the most powerful person in the world, and the reason for that is, They can affect the global economy in 2 seconds. They can end the world. We're the only country with an arsenal of nuclear weapons that could end the world tomorrow. They could end the world as we know it. And so there has to be a checks and balances, on that person, whoever is holding that office. And that's exactly what Congress is doing. And so taking Democrats out of it, taking Republicans out of it, taking Pelosi and Nadler and Trump and Schiff out of it, all these weird characters that have fallen into these high-powered spots, it's really a very healthy thing that's going on in the country right now to be able to decide what those boundaries are. And you know, the Democrats recognize that there's no way they could take this into the court system to challenge these things because there's not enough time. So they're pushing impeachment. So, you know, to the American people, I say, hang in there. This is actually a very healthy process. It's like sausage. You don't want to watch it getting made. You just want to enjoy the end product. And I think once we are through all of this sort of, you know, high drama that's being played out, we're actually going to be in a healthier place as a country.
You hope, you know, you look at everything objectively, Joe, and you know, was it as egregious as it seems to be stated by Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and their committees, you know, on the Democrat side of things? You know, you try and just look at things objectively. You know, you look at the phone call on the 25th of July. Should it have been made? Probably not. But was it that of a high crime and misdemeanor to get this guy out of the office? You know, it's just a rush to judgment. You look at everything in perspective. They never liked him. They didn't want him to win 2016. He did. They thought Hillary Clinton would be sitting in that White House. Let's face it. And now with everything looming in 2020, and let's not forget, you got caucuses happening in Iowa, what, February 3rd? A month later, believe it or not, folks, March the 3rd or so, you have Super Tuesday taking place. So you have a streamline of events, rush to judges, justice and everything else here. And, you know, it's fascinating to me, and the oddity of it all is, you know, these draft articles of impeachment, which have changed like a blackjack dealer at a casino, you know, where's the bribery? Where's the quid pro quo? Where's the extortion, Joe, I ask? None of that. But in essence, it's funny to me, the same day as these articles announced, Nancy Pelosi announcing a deal with the president to pass his U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal, replacing NAFTA. You know, a win for him and her members of moderate proportions, yet you have the speaker simultaneously treating this president as a threat to the republic and as a man she can actually do business with. The oddity of it all, when you look at things in perspective in that nature, you know?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree, and that's what the American people get so disgusted with. This is just pure politics, so do the math, Jay, right? You're Nancy Pelosi. You got to do the math. She's Speaker. She's heading the Democratic caucus there in the House, and she's getting tremendous pressure to impeach Donald Trump. And up until that call, she didn't really see a window to be able to do it. And he has that call, and nothing about the call was improper, nothing about anything really, other than when he started talking about, can you do me a favor, which was off script and not one of the talking points, of course, because that's classic Trump. You know, he gave her a window. So here's what she's trying to accomplish. And look, she's a brilliant lady. I got to tell you, she's a tough cookie and a brilliant lady. It's not about policy. It's about how is she conducting politics. And her math is this. Her math is, go ahead, Schiff and Nadler. You've been chomping at the bit to do this for years. Go do it now, but I want it done. I want the House done with this by the end of the year. I don't want anything else. I want our job done. I want it tidied up. And it's so obvious. I mean, they're conducting hearings while they've already constructed and drafted the articles of impeachment. It's pure politics. Because Nancy Pelosi's math is, let me placate the base who's clamoring for this impeachment. Let me placate them very quickly, get it done by the end of the year, dump it to the Senate. It's no longer the House's problem. And then now I'm going to start passing legislation. So the narrative we have going into the 2020 election is that the Democrats, you know, fulfilled their obligation to the base by impeaching the president, and is now ironically and amazingly and comically working with the president to get all this great legislation done. So it's a very smart political play. It's risky, but it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it plays out in 2020.
And as I stated earlier, you know, there just seems to be a lot of confusion on what exactly Trump did wrong. You know, all the talk early, the quid pro quo in that phone call with Zelensky, the Ukraine president, turned into charges of bribery and extortion, yet all those terms absent from these articles of impeachment. How ironic is that? I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, abuse of power covering the efforts to get Ukraine to investigate the meddling of 2016. The company, by the way, which takes a back seat to all of this, Joe, Burisma, with Hunter Biden. And it still, to me, doesn't explain how the president compromised the national security of the United States and undermined the integrity, by the way, of the United States, the process, the democratic process, or solicited interference in the 2020 election. I still don't see it as far as that, but it'll be fascinating. I'll tell you, the next fascinating thing to me will be Mitch McConnell's move here. You know, reports that he wants to just throw this out altogether, yet you have the president saying, you know what, let's go to trial. Let's get right in there. You know what? Be careful what you wish for, President Trump. I think McConnell's trying to make some sense here. What do you think of that aspect?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. So we've been focused a lot, and this is again what Nancy Pelosi's strategy was, and it was a smart strategy, is let the House get their articles of impeachment drafted, let the vote take place, and then make it Mitch McConnell's problem, right? And that becomes an even murkier problem in the Senate. So now what's going to happen is the focus is going to be on the Republican-controlled Senate in 2020. And Jay, the thing is, you know, as far as impeachments go, there's only been three in the history of our country. There are no real rules. There are absolutely no real rules. We don't know. There are some procedural things that have been enacted over the years, but there's no real rules. The Chief Justice John Roberts, I'm sure he's pumped that he's going to be presiding over an impeachment trial. I mean, what a great opportunity for a Chief Justice in the annals of our history. But there's no authority. There's nothing that lays out what his authority is, what rulings he can make. Is hearsay admissible? What witnesses are relevant or not relevant? There's no rules. So this is going to be, if it goes to a full-blown trial, it's going to be incredible. You know, it's going to be incredible, again, from a constitutional perspective to watch. There's been talk, I don't think it'll happen, but there has been talk that Mitch McConnell may make a motion to dismiss the entire indictment on the president. I don't know that happens. They're talking about fast-tracking it. There's no rules about who can call witnesses and how many witnesses. In President Clinton's trial, both sides sat down and hammered out what they thought would be fair rules, which is why it took so long. Here, I don't think any of that's going to happen. I think Mitch McConnell's going to come up with some rules that he feels comfortable with, and that's the way we're gonna roll with this thing. And that's going to be another learning process for the country. So all of it is incredible. I just want to say something though with this obstruction of Congress charge for impeachment. That to me was not a good play. The abuse of power, I felt they should have just went with the abuse of power play. Obstruction of Congress, and Schiff has been saying all along the hearings, probably trying to keep the base fired up, was that was one of the articles that President Nixon was going to be impeached on if it had gone forward and he hadn't resigned. You know, that's kind of a silly claim. So the claim there is Congress is trying to utilize oversight, and the president is claiming executive privilege, and the president is claiming attorney-client privilege with Don McGahn and others and his legal team, Rudy Giuliani. Those are for the courts to decide, though. You know, and Congress doesn't like it, and I get it. Congress doesn't like it, and I listened to Adam Schiff when he was presenting the articles of impeachment, and I understood his frustration, and I get his frustration. You know, he said people want to know why we're not waiting. Well, you know, it takes 8 months to get one ruling, and then it's got to go to an appellate court, and then it's got to go to the Supreme Court, and then it's got to go back to another court, and we've been doing this for years. So we felt that articles of impeachment were appropriate. That I don't think is a valid argument under the Constitution. One thing we can all agree to, I think, and this is the most important thing to me. This is politics aside, Jay. Politics aside, and you know, you have to call it as you see it. When a court has issued a ruling, the president and his administration have abided by the rulings, okay? And if a court issued a ruling and the president disregarded that ruling, that would be a very, very clear, simple impeachment to have and should be had. But I think what we need to remember as a country is Congress and the executive branch have been fighting forever and will fight forever. And the courts have to set boundaries so that they know what the rules are. And, you know, the president was delaying it to try and get it into the court system. I get that, but that's politics. Congress is impeaching him on on obstruction of Congress to fast track and to keep it out of the courts. I get that. That's politics. But what we should focus on, and I think is a very positive thing in all of this, is everybody, both sides, but the president as well, has abided by whatever courts have ruled. And that's really what matters in this country, the rule of law.
And the other thing, Joe, is the fact that, listen, they would have been better off sticking with the article of bribery here or extortion. I mean, to change the game plan midstream, I mean, that sends a message of murkiness to me. You know, really not knowing which way to go. It's almost like somebody putting their hand into a hat and picking out a couple of topics. Oh, here we go. Obstruction of Congress. Misconduct of the office. We'll go with that. You know, it's almost as if it's a grab bag and picking names out of something here. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I'll tell you another thing in which they always stated the fact, let the American people decide. You look at the latest national poll, the first one out since all this took place. You have kind of a little bit of a switcheroo here. You know, 51% stating now they oppose this whole deal of impeachment. 45 in favor of, and 5% or so undecided there. So it's kind of interesting how the tables have turned somewhat here regarding that. You know, let's see how it all plays out. We'll see how McConnell handles all this, you know.
I'm actually excited about it. I think like I said, this is an academic exercise, an important one. It's an important one for our country. There's a lot of parts of the Constitution that we haven't looked at yet as in our young history. We're looking at them now that we're going to decide it. Congress is going to make its decision. And you know what? Luckily, it's an election year. So Congress will do what Congress wants to do. The Senate will do what the Senate wants to do. And yet at the end of the year, it's going to be the voters who decide ultimately how we want our country to be run. So, you know, we get the last say, and it's so, so critical in 2020 that that voters get out there and understand that at the end of the day, our democracy is all about us getting the final say as to what it is we're going to tolerate and how our country should be run.
No doubt. Joe Campola with us, of course, off the record, on the record. Joe, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to hit Jersey City. What happened there in just a second? All right, we are back off the record, on the record with Joe Campola of the wonderful firm, of course, of Campola, Middleton, and McCormick. Three locations, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, around Conifer, Bridgehampton, and in Westbury. Joe, let's head to Jersey City. I tell you, never letting your guard down is what you learn out of this. These shooters were adherents of a fringe religious movement that's been labeled a hate group by experts who track extremists in this country. This David Anderson, described by law enforcement sources as a follower of the Black Hebrew Israelites, introduced his girlfriend, an accomplice, by the way, Francine Graham, to their beliefs. In essence, I think another neighbor, from what I read, actually said he occasionally heard the couple chanting religious stuff inside the apartment of Francine Graham. The Black Hebrew Israelites are not a part of mainstream Judaism. They believe that white people are agents of Satan, Jews are liars, and false worshipers of God, and black people, the true chosen people of the Bible, all according to the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. But a very troubling set of circumstances at the Kosher Deli in Jersey City. You know, you go back to the Tree Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh a year and a half ago, and it really just teaches you one thing here, that there is still hatred throughout, and we got to keep an eye on things around here, and somehow we got to quell the notion that everything is just dandy. It's not.
I totally agree, Jay. The Jews have been dealing with anti-Semitic sentiments since the beginning of time. I mean, if you look back at the history of the oppression of Jewish people, it's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. and it's incredibly scary. See, I just don't get it, right? So I don't get what fuels that hatred, and I can't understand it. And when I can't understand it, I'm even more afraid of it than when I can understand it. And, you know, here in the United States, we're not perfect, Jay, but we get a lot of things right. We have a zero-tolerance policy across the board for these types of hate crimes. Our hate crimes units are very, very vigilant. You look at what happens when these people march in Charlottesville and promote hate, the country immediately rallies around and squashes it everywhere we can, everywhere we see it. We have an overwhelming sense of trying to squash it. And I think that in America, that gives us a false sense of what's happening in the world. See, the thing that really scares me, Jay, and I've been actually reading about this and following this all year, is in Europe, there is such an incredible rise of anti-Semitism, such a huge rise that, you know, the New York Times has been reporting that a third of European Jews are thinking about leaving the country. That's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened when the Nazis were gaining power in Germany, okay, and the whole world turned their back to what was going on of the oppression of Jews in Europe at that point. And that's exactly what's going on in Europe right now. The rise of anti-Semitism in Europe is astronomical. You know, and it trickles into here in the United States, and we're incredibly, incredibly vigilant in squashing it out like a toxic bug. But we have to be really careful and mindful as to what's going on in the rest of the world, particularly in Europe. And, you know, if we do not, and this is something I think we as the United States need to learn our lessons, and our isolationist policies that happened pre-Hitler, which did not work, I think we need to be very vigilant and watch this trend and use this as a wake-up call. Again, like you mentioned, the attack on the synagogue, now we have this. We need to use this as a wake-up call to really not just be focused on ISIS as terrorists, but to be focused on these anti-Semitic groups as well, and as with as much vigilance as we do with ISIS over in Europe, because that's going to be a huge, huge problem.
Big event yesterday at the White House, Joe, where the president signed an executive order intending to, and it was, you know, timing is everything, but, you know, intending to stamp out anti-Semitism on the college campuses and really defining Judaism as a nationality as well as a religion, giving students all across Title VI protection. So, you know, at least it puts a little bit more of a headline to this. And this Title VI, by the way, forbids discrimination on the basis of race, color, and national origin at colleges and universities that receive this federal funding. So, you know, you had a lot of interesting people up there, Alan Dershowitz, Robert Kraft, owner of the Patriots, but Jared Kushner's son-in-law is Jewish, by the way. All supporting this, and I thought the timing of it was very appropriate yesterday at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue there.
Yeah, I thought that was terrific. And again, in the United States, I think we do an incredibly great job at it. But let's just revisit history for 2 minutes, Jay. So World War One occurs, and Germany's economy is decimated, okay? And it gave rise to the Third Reich by being able to rally, you know, a sentiment that Germany was dealt with unfairly, their economy was unfairly punished, and it was the Jews that were to blame. And so that's how Hitler was able to gain momentum, okay? And all that took a whole bunch of years to play out and a whole bunch of economic issues to play out. So now fast forward to today's snapshot in history, and we got a huge economic issue going on in Europe. Great Britain is still wrestling with Brexit. And we don't know how that's going to impact Europe. We don't know how that's going to impact the EU. We don't know where the economy is going to turn over there. Okay, and if that economy starts to turn, and if the European economy declines, and if some of those countries really start to get decimated, like we saw with Greece and others, okay, this anti-Semitic, you know, sentiment that's already very prevalent in Europe, we have to watch and make sure that does not become the scapegoat for what's going on, because that's exactly what gave power to the Third Reich. That's exactly what led us into World War II, and that's exactly what we need to be focused on right now.
There's so much history, too. Let's not forget the ongoing battles regarding Palestine and Israel. Six-Day War, 1967. What's happening with the elections? Benjamin Netanyahu under fire here. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And the protection of Israel, rightfully so, they are the linchpin to the Middle East as far as what goes on there. The little state of Israel, the little engine that could, that Israel is so vital to world peace. Hard to believe, but it is. And you got to look at the history of it all and how it plays out. Fascinating there. But you're right. The ongoing slaughter, the observations of it all, Tree of Life Synagogue, now this kosher deli, you only hope somehow we can ever reach some sort of a playing field where everybody gets along. But you know that's not going to happen at all. So the beat goes on. Joe Campolo, off the record, on the regular. Joe, let's go to the next big debate, which is coming up, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, a week from tonight, the 19th. Andrew Yang, I know, just qualified, joining Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Tom Steyer, and Elizabeth Warren. Michael Bloomberg in the mix, although doing it very, very quietly under the radar. What do you think? I mean, the debate stage is kind of leveled out somewhat here. The entranceway of Bloomberg, has he made an impact in your mind so far?
I don't think so. But, you know, it's really very early to tell. Don't forget, you know, Bill Clinton was a sleeper and then came out of nowhere, right? Came out of nowhere deeper into the election year to run away with it. So it's very difficult to tell what impact Mike Bloomberg is making. You know, I even all week long I've been sort of Googling around trying to figure that out, and he's doing it very quietly. Now, he may be lining himself up. He may be, you know, greasing the right skids that are needed to ultimately make that sprint towards it. And let's hope so, because I think that'll make the race much more interesting. I mean, I thought when he initially announced that he was going to be running, I thought it would be a much bigger impact right now. And I initially flashed in my head, you know, the winning ticket is Bloomberg and Buttigieg as his VP. And I thought that would be almost a winning team. I mean, I think that would be something very well received. But now I don't know. Now I don't know, Jay. I'm curious. These debates are overshadowed by all of this impeachment nonsense. The senators there, you know, Klobuchar and Warren, they must be infuriated that all of the debates are taking place while the House is stealing the air out of the room with impeachment, and then if there's a trial, they're going to have to go sit through that trial and get off the campaign trail again. And maybe Mike Bloomberg's waiting to pounce on that moment. I'm not sure. But I think as the year progresses on, you're going to see more and more of Mike Bloomberg. The question is he going to have the right message? Is he going to have the right message? You know, that's important. And he's got to start soon. I think he's got to start very soon.
I don't think he's going to make much of an impact myself. I didn't like the way he started out, the whole thing with the apology tour and the stop and frisk. To me, he went down a couple of notches. I know he was out in Colorado last week talking about gun control. He's doing it very quietly. I think you're right. You know, it's a marathon, we know, and he's just doing a very light jog right now. But I think in the end, I don't know. I just don't think he'll have enough of a splash. Listen, you're talking to a guy who thought Kamala Harris was going to be the nominee, and I still think, by the way, if Biden gets through, that he's going to pick Kamala Harris as a running mate. I think that would be very interesting, a Biden-Harris tandem there. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But I think you're right. I think the overshadowing of what's happening right now in Capitol Hill with these debates going on, it's almost as if nobody really cares. You know, let's see what happens here. I'd be interested to see what happens with Cory Booker. To me, he has been the most consistent candidate so far. Hopefully he'll raise enough money to warrant an appearance on the stage next week. But in essence, to me, he has been solid in his approach. He's articulate. He answers the questions the right way. He'll combat the right way as well so far. To me, Cory Booker's an interesting guy to watch here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's incredibly smart, incredibly articulate. I think his I Am Spartacus moment will come back to haunt him if he somehow winds up getting the nomination. I don't see it. Kamala Harris, I was very surprised. She's out. I was with you, man. I was with you right from the get-go that I thought she would make such a strong showing. And she would make a perfect vice president, right? She would make a perfect vice president because I didn't think she was going to be able to get the nomination this year with Joe Biden coming into the race. If Joe Biden hadn't come into the race, I would have thought she would have been the front runner. Biden comes in, and then I thought, just like you, it was going to be Biden-Harris. Mike Bloomberg coming in now. If it's Bloomberg, I'm not sure that him partnered with Harris is the right partnership for Mike Bloomberg's personality, because he's much, much stronger than Joe Biden, and Harris is a very strong personality. So, Jay, at the end of the day, it's really going to be interesting. I don't think anybody can predict anything at this point. That's what makes it so interesting.
I agree 100%. Let's go across the pond for a second, Joe. You got this highly anticipated, very important UK general election on the way. It's today, you know. And, you know, listen, they're going to have to choose between the very different paths to this Brexit line deal. So, you know, not the only thing on the table regarding Brexit, but you got party leaders laying out plans to, you know, lots of topics, climate change, tax reform. But Prime Minister Boris Johnson, you know, he has called for early elections. The hopes, I guess, his party can win in sort of a majority and push his Brexit deal through. We'll see if that backfires. But even after these things are over, really no guaranteed clear path going forward here. So you got a lot happening with Brexit, Boris Johnson, and everything else. Got to keep an eye on this.
Yeah, it's huge. Look, there's actually 650, I think there's 650 seats that are up for election in this election. So who knows? Again, when you're looking at trying to predict where the world is headed, let alone where our presidential election is headed, you know, who knows? So the 650 lawmakers that are going to be chosen in the UK, there's Boris Johnson, and this is what I love. This is what I love about the jealousy of the world against America, Jay. They're all so jealous, right? So, look, we clearly have our own circus going on here, you know, in terms of impeachment, in terms of you know, a belligerent president. We have our own circus going on here. But when you look at what's going on in the UK, and you look at, you know, the failed policies of Theresa May, and she just got, you know, dumped very, very quickly. You look at the fact that there's scandals with Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein, and the Crown is under total scrutiny with regards to that. You look at Boris Johnson, who, you know, who somehow feels he has the right to mock Donald Trump, which I don't really understand. You look at just they just have not been able for years and years and years to get this straightened out now. And here they are with another general election with no clear path, no clear front runner, and could shift the course of UK and the European economy drastically again within 24 hours. You know, How dare they throw stones from their glass houses? You know, it's incredible. But the real implication is, again, where is Brexit gonna take the EU? Where is the European economy going to go? It's very challenging for us. The stock market's at an all-time high right now. Our economy is super hot, and I got to tell you, I've been talking to a lot of. So I sit on a bunch of different charitable boards. Some of them have some very substantial investment holdings, and the very high-level investment advisors that are out there are all in agreement, Jay, that they don't see a recession on the horizon here with the U.S. Economy. Interest rates are historically low, and so it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out, how it implicates the world economy, you know, and how that's going to affect the 2020 election, because right now, the biggest thing that Donald Trump has going in his favor across the board is economy's super hot. Everybody's got jobs. Stock market's high. 401ks are flush with money. Life is good. Why change it? I know what I'm doing. Why change it, right? That's a very powerful message to send out to America. The dominoes start falling in Europe, and the stock market starts to tank a bit. That's going to be a very, very different dialogue going into the 2020 election.
Joe Campolo, off the record, on the record. Joe, let's go to Greta Thunberg for just a second, the youngest ever recipient of the Time Person of the Year. Now, listen, I submitted a name. I'll tell her. I'll say it to everyone right now. It's Joe Campolo. To me, he's my 2019 Person of the Year. I mean, come on. He's a Hall of Famer, for crying out loud. But, you know, I didn't agree with the choice, and I get it. You know, she's 16 years of age. She's an activist, leading a youth movement to raise awareness regarding global warming. You know, I wish we would have solutions to all of this. You know, with all this going about, I'm tired of hearing about Jane Fonda being arrested and everything else. I'd like to see somebody come up with multiple solutions. That would have been my choice, by the way. You know what I thought of yesterday? I really thought of this. I thought of it as maybe Persons of the Year. How about the conglomeration of Hong Kong going up against China, wanting a better life for themselves, tired of the manipulation, tired of the so-called monarchy being present, reigning over them. How about giving me somebody or something substantial when it comes to person or persons of the year? I didn't like the choice, but I certainly understand the magnetism of a 16-year-old and the voice that she has had.
I totally agree. You know, when I was thinking about, so first of all, Time magazine has lost complete relevancy that it used to have. I mean, the anticipation, you know, when we were younger of who was going to be Time, you know, magazine person of the year was dominated the airwaves. It dominated the airwaves. It's really lost incredible amounts of relevancy, and I can't tell you the last time I read Time magazine, and I don't know anybody who reads it. So that being said, what's their reason? I totally agree. I would have had the protesters in Hong Kong as the people of the year, Jay. I think when we look at you know, this past year and this generation and what's going to make an impact, getting that Chinese dynasty to move even an inch is incredibly difficult to do, but it's so important in moving, you know, the needle in terms of world peace and human rights, that those protesters, you know, who actually did something, and they sacrificed, you know, to me would have been the logical choice. But what is Time trying to do? Time is trying to make itself relevant to the next generation of readers, right? They're trying to make themselves relevant to millennials and others who probably don't even know what Time magazine is. That's something their grandfather used to read. And so, you know, Greta Thunberg is their choice. Now, it's kind of cool. I think the whole story is kind of cool. I do. I think she had her moment, and you know, the internet and memes have made it probably a much bigger moment. It's an important issue. It certainly is an important issue. But to me, there hasn't been a lot of sacrifice. There hasn't been a lot of risk. There hasn't been a lot of courage the way that these protesters have shown, you know, over in Hong Kong. So I agree, an important issue, and certainly someone who got a spotlight put on it and a dialogue started. But across the globe, you got people who are risking everything and sacrificing everything and who are actually affecting change. So to me, that would have been my vote.
Listen, ask an average young person what's climate change all about. They'll tell you it's fall season into winter. But in essence, I think we need more dialogue. I agree with you, though. The Time Person of the Year has certainly panned out in a cloudy way, without question, these days. Joe, finally, Gerrit Cole signing a deal with the Yankees. Sorry. You know what? Listen, you got Michael Wacha. That, to me, it will fill the shoes of Zach Wheeler. But, you know, I got to tell you, $324 million, 9 years. How high are we going to go these days? $36 million for a pitcher. As big a fan as I am of the Yankees, that investment is a little too much for somebody who's throwing a ball 99 miles an hour. every 5 days. That's something where an arm could go at a moment's notice. I mean, where are we going in sports? How high is that proverbial ceiling? Well, I guess it's on the level of a Hal Steinbrenner rolled up his wallet and saw a moth fly out and said, you know what? We got to go for it. Pressures and everything else these days, social media, I think plays a lot into this stuff.
Well, it smacks of the Yankees' desperation to be relevant once again, Jay. And there, I got my dig in on the Yankees, right? But we joke about people buying elections and how money buys elections in politics. Money's buying professional sports at this point. You know, to spend that amount of money for a pitcher, there clearly was a business decision that was made by the Yankees that they'll be able to make more. And I do think they are under tremendous, tremendous pressure from their fans to win it all again. And I think you're right. I think Steinbrenner feels, you know, he'll lay out this money because if they're able to win it all next year, he'll make that back in spades. I'm just really starting to get very frustrated with professional sports across the board at this point. You know, it was growing up in the late 60s and early 70s where these guys just didn't make a lot of money and they went out and they just played their hearts out and you could see their hearts and souls were in it. Their blood, sweat, and tears were in it. Those were the heroes. Those were the heroes we grew up with. You know, and I feel like today's sports is all about money, algorithms, pitch count, you know, and it's not the same experience that I had when my grandfather would take me to Shea Stadium in the early 70s. It's really not. So, you know, it's the way the world is. We have to accept it and grow and change. But basically, you know, teams are allowed to buy victories. And I don't know that that's what the whole, you know, attraction to professional sports was as football and baseball and even golf. Got to tell you, even golf grew into dominance.
I tried to explain to my daughter. My daughter said, you know, Dad, $324 million. I hope Gerrit Cole, she says, puts that money to good use. She's right. I try to explain, you know, in baseball, what, 24 guys on a team, 30 teams, whatever, 600 players on the planet that have an opportunity of making this type of money. You know, I kind of put it in perspective in that regard, but, man, it is obscene. Joe, before we head out of here, your company had a heck of a year. I know you got your holiday party tonight. A challenging year, a new location and everything else. I would say, I would ask, are you happy with the way things panned out in 19 and hopefully getting ready for a huge year in 20?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. I just sort of trounced professional sports, but I use them as analogies all the time here at CMM. And I will tell you, Jay, we had a very, very challenging year. We did it. It started, you know, the beginning of last year with the loss of my dad, who was our long-term controller, and being it was so unexpected, that sort of left us in a very difficult spot to get our arms around that whole situation. And then we had some, you know, some challenges with clients. And, you know, we have a very robust mergers and acquisitions practice. And so the good news is when one of our clients is ready to sell their business, it's a very exciting time and it's a great transaction for us. The bad news is when they're done, we lose a client. And so we had a lot of great transactions early on, but we lost clients. So we had to sort of hustle and bustle to get it done. We had some attrition, you know, with folks who moved on. We had some new hires that needed to be trained. So it's very, very challenging, very challenging. But I got to tell you, I am so, so lucky. I am so blessed to have the team that I have here at CMM. And what I said to them, because we had, you know, a discussion with my leadership team and a dinner last week to really go through it and talk about our victories, you know, what I said to them is, you know, a great team is able to execute well together. And if you think about what happens in football, just at the snap of a football, you know, you get 30 something guys on the field, and in their mind is only what they're supposed to do at that particular moment. They're not worried about what else is going on around them. You know, they all have a very different thing to do, and it's so beautifully orchestrated. When you watch teams do it well, it's so beautifully orchestrated. And that's how you win games, one down at a time, right? And that's exactly what we were able to do this year so well. Our team was able to focus and execute on the things they needed to deliver. without looking around and worrying about what everybody else was up to. And that helped us get us the ball across the field this year, which I'm incredibly grateful and proud to my entire team for. You know, having said that, we're looking forward to an incredibly strong 2020. You know, the tea leaves seem to be lining up for us, Jay, and for many, many companies here on Long Island. You know, I predict a very strong 2020 across the board.
And while with working football analogies, in my opinion, Campolo's like Belichick. You know, he really is. I mean, look at the job he does. Leadership is so much to any company. Nobody does it better than Joe. And I'll say this, you know, Belichick's mantra is just do your job. And that really, I've known you a long time, Joe, and that's really your mantra too. If everyone does their thing, guess what? That equates to success, and you look at the great CMM, that's what it has.
Well, I appreciate that, Jay, and it's very, very true. It's all about just staying focused and executing every day.
Hit by the clock a little bit. I know that coming up in a couple, you're going to be moderating the HILI annual meeting, a legislative breakfast. I think that's January the 17th. We're going to look forward to that. CMM Cares has grown beyond. I tell you, you've done some job with that CMM Cares, Joe.
Yeah, so proud. We're officially a 501c3 charitable foundation. Victoria, who is my director of marketing, is shifting over to be the executive director of CMM Cares. Super excited with the amount of impact we've been able to make here on Long Island from a charitable perspective.
Excellent job, my friend. We look forward to talking with you in a couple of weeks. I think it's right after we're going to have Joe on after Christmas, I do believe. So I want to wish you a very happy holiday, my friend. Very happy holiday. And I will see you soon.
You as well, Jay. Give Peggy a kiss from me, and we'll see you soon.